My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com. And this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Welcome to a special sports edition of Keep It. I'm Ira.
Hi, it's Kara.
And it's me, old sporto, Lewis.
You're going to love hearing us talk about sports in a few minutes. And we will also be joined by author Samantha Irby for a discussion on the Netflix stand-up special Nanette and Drake. This weekend, I was at the Families Belong Together March in downtown LA, and Maxine Waters was definitely one of the highlights.
She was
fiery.
Yes, she was fiery.
She's rarely off her game. She was particularly on today.
All I have to say is this. If you shoot me, you better shoot straight. There's nothing like a wounded animal.
The best thing about her is that Trump has recently branded her Mad Maxine, which...
That's just awesome.
...is a beautiful name. Like, everybody loves Mad Max. We really liked Fury Road.
It's the only clever thing he's ever said. It's actually kind of clever in, like, a cute way.
Yeah. She is also the only person who's out here, like, matching him soundbite for soundbite.
Right.
Every time she gets on the mic, it's covered.
Right. She was great. The march was really good. I mean, good. I've been having this really weird feeling, actually, going to these marches and demonstrations where I'm really mad that I have to be there and that I'm so angry that we have to do this. Mm-hmm. And there's sometimes for me this sort of vibe of, like, woohoo, and, like, taking Instagram photos and things like that, that it feels a little off-brand, I don't know, or just incongruent to me with the mood. But I did enjoy listening to Maxine. And, like, what I liked is that she was sort of matching the anger I felt, which is often an anger I don't feel like a lot of people around me are expressing. It sort of feels like they're doing this fun thing. And I get it. It's, you know, it's nice to feel energized. And it's certainly not that people shouldn't be going. But she matched sort of the tone of what I was feeling, which is, like, I'm so mad and I cannot believe we have to be here doing this.
And by the way, she remains rare among politicians in that way where when she speaks, you actually feel the thing you're feeling. Like, it's represented, you know, like Elizabeth Warren's one of those people too. My dream.
Rare among Democrats.
Totally.
Because
we're too busy being nice.
You constantly have people out here being like, she should apologize to Trump, or this isn't representative of all Democrats.
Get the fuck out of here.
Like, I've had enough of what all Democrats are representative
of. I need more stunts from her. My dream is she starts on the West Coast with a roll of receipts and walks straight across the country to Washington, unrolling it the whole time. Like, hands across America.
Receipts across America.
Yes.
She had a fire. I also really appreciated Bambi Salcedo. She is the CEO of the Trans Latina Coalition. And I was at a fundraiser for them a couple of weeks ago. And she was hot. She was swearing up a storm, called out Trump, called out ICE and immigration detention centers, especially for how trans women can get caught in that system and basically just, like, be denied the medications they need or die without the people in their families around them. And so, yeah, I feel sort of the same way as Kara. Like, I was angry. A lot of people, like Bambi and Maxine, were making a point to be like, you can't just come to the march and
right.
be cute.
Right.
Bambi specifically was like, it's cute that you're out here, mm-hmm. you're taking your photos, but what are you going to do about it tomorrow?
I do think generally with, and I had written an article about this for Jezebel, and all of the white women got very mad at me because I said that I did not enjoy the Women's March. I did have this feeling of like, where the hell were you when I was at a march for Mike Brown and there were like 40 of us down at Limerick Park? It was that kind of shit where I was like, I definitely am glad that people are, and you know, and it sucks because it took something awful to sort of energize people. But I had a skepticism of like, I do wonder if you're going to keep showing up in the way that you have been and if you're going to keep showing up for other things, like showing up for the Keep Families Together. Like there were fewer people there than there were at the Women's March. And it's that type of stuff that I
just
think it's
local election.
Yeah, I think it's important to like, it's cool. I mean, it's not cool, but it's fine to put on your pussy hat and you can and do the signs and all of that, but and take your photos, but it's bigger than that. And it's just something that I think is, you know, you don't want it to be I went to the march and I took a cool Instagram photo and I supported and I've done what I've needed to do.
Also, there's something about these marches, period, where basically you're told to go. You know, it feels less like a personal conviction than just, well, anybody with a brain at all will be there, so I've got to be
and
there.
And I actually, you know? I had a very weird feeling because I went and I didn't take any pictures or post about it. And I, for a second, I was like, oh, people are going to think I didn't go, which is not the, where I was like mad at myself for even thinking that, because that's obviously not the point. But It does feel like you need to prove that you're doing it. And I was like, I don't need, showing up was the deed. And I don't need to like prove that I went. But even the fact that that crossed my mind that like people are going to think you didn't go to this thing. I was mad at myself for even thinking that. But I mean, I don't want to
print out your bank receipts, Kara. Have you donated any money today?
I mean, and I don't want it to be like a bummer, but it's something that I think about a lot with these, and it was something that I wrote about and everyone got very mad at me, and I still know that I'm right about it. So
listen,
well, that's convenient.
Yeah.
Midterms are coming up, and I think that is when we are truly going to see how much everyone is devoted to everything. And I hope we are.
Because if not, I'm out of here, y'all.
I'm going to say, American
Samoa,
here I come.
I'm like, the 4th of July is coming up. I'm like, I got to go.
Who wants to be an expat? We can film Keep It in Paris. Coming up later this episode, we will have author Samantha Irby. She wrote Meaty and We Are Never Meeting in Real Life and An All-Around Perfect Person. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations. There's no limit to the range of black stories, black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as very nuanced and black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us.
Doesn't the black experience sound like a 3-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks. Knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com. And this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Lewis, this podcast is about to get really masked.
I've never once thought you actually wanted me off the podcast, but we're starting with LeBron James. I was like, I'll just leave through like the ceiling with an umbrella.
We are doing a sports roundup because sports are happening.
All the time. It's the summer. Lewis, it's not just summer that they're happening. You don't know this is a constant thing.
Very confusing for me. Yeah. Don't worry, I wikied basketball before this, so I'm all ready to be an authority.
There are also gay people that play sports.
I mean, they haven't introduced themselves to me at Fresh Corn Grill in West Hollywood, so I'll never know.
The biggest news maybe this week is LeBron James is joining the Lakers, and I am ready to show up to games taking Instagrams like I have had season tickets.
Like you have been a Lakers fan.
Like I've had season tickets for a minute.
I don't know how you can like enjoy basketball and not be a fan of LeBron James, but I feel like he's the most like Hollywood sort of NBA player. Like he's even been in a movie, but like he just makes sense in LA, and I'm excited for him.
Amy Schumer is thirsting to get him in another movie. Like, you're in LA, why don't you just come on down, like shoot something with me on a Saturday.
Oh Lord, he's not doing that. He has a production company that I don't know that people know about, that like they produce movies and films and TV and things like that. So I'm ready for him to be just like a giant LA star.
Yeah, and if any basketball player deserves an Oscar, it's LeBron, not Kobe. What I actually really love about LeBron joining the Lakers, and why I've also been sort of like amused by the Warriors over the past few years, is that I am really intrigued by the concept of dynasties in basketball, mm-hmm. because it's just so soapy and dramatic to me. And the players that they are amassing just to beat the Warriors, like, they're putting Lance Stephenson on the Lakers, and he has blown in LeBron's ear on court and, like, smacked him in the balls.
Just, like, taunted
court.
Him. Yeah. Yeah. They're not friends.
And now these two are supposed to be, oh, we're going to get a championship ring together.
For someone who didn't really care about basketball, like, the period of Kobe and Shaq and Lamar Odom, but in particular, like, it was this crossbreeding of you had Lamar Odom on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So even if you didn't care about basketball, like, there was, you knew him and you sort of knew what was going on, and Kobe and Shaq had their drama. And so it was like a fun, it was like all of the divas are in LA.
If there are divas and there are beefs, I will be tuned to the TV.
I kind of forget that basketball has this kind of gossipy drama. I think of team sports as just games and individual sports as drama. You know what I mean? Like tennis, like I always feel like Serena Williams is about to turn to the camera and give a monologue.
It's,
you know,
a different type of drama for sure. Like it does have this sort of this interpersonal aspect to it, and LA is the place to do it.
Yeah, and you know, you forget about it because like we don't really have basketball. Is like one of the, you know, sports that doesn't really translate to like TV or film that much. We don't have that many.
Or it has its like diehards. Yeah,
TV shows. Like football is so much easier, I guess.
Oh, like a Friday Night Lights.
Like a Friday Night Lights. Yeah.
I will say, though, I'm a little not sad for Cleveland, but I had underestimated how much that city had changed because he was in it. It's cool to be there in a way. There's microbreweries around and stuff, you know?
You know what? They dragged LeBron and had a lot of things to say when he left for Miami. And then we're like, oh, we're sorry when he came back.
Also, I will say Cleveland, and yes, professional athletes make a ton of money, but LeBron James is the best example. Like, LeBron James is underpaid. Because he is so valuable, and it sort of goes back to like if you're talking about more largely like Colin Kaepernick and the NFL owners and profiting off of these black athletes, like he brings in revenue to the city of Cleveland. Like the state of Ohio is more valuable when LeBron James is playing on that team, and he should be in a perfect world compensated for that, and it's a lot more than the $130 million whatever he gets with his contract. And so it's not this, you know, you don't want to be like boo-hoo, the millionaire isn't getting paid enough, but like these athletes are very, very valuable in the system that they're in because there are like very few black owners and things like that. They don't allow them to profit off the sport the way that they should.
It's also just that weird, he's a one-man industry thing. So whatever he does, like, transforms the landscape of the entire sport. It's literally like if Meryl Streep just decided, I only am releasing my movies on Crackle now. It's like, okay, well, now the entire industry has shifted and everything's different and you have to be on the computer.
I was wondering how you were going to get Meryl Streep into this conversation.
Yeah. I look was at wondering. Me go.
Yes.
You like expertise?
You want to pitch Jane Fonda in a remake of Eddie?
I saw Eddie. It was fine.
But no, Karen brings up like such an interesting point too, because like just for the benefit of joining the Warriors, DeMarcus Cousins took a pay cut.
Right.
You know, like people get not the money that they're owed, and it goes into that thing of how we treat black athletes and how they are the faces of these industries, but all the owners are still white. You know, mm-hmm. And then we get into that trouble with the NFL where you have public black faces of football, but then you get owners who get to be like, if you kneel during a game,
right,
we're fining you because, I don't know, we love Trump.
Right.
Shut up and sing. Yes.
Speaking of other black athletes who do not get their due, Serena Williams is back in action. She has given birth. She has released a documentary.
A clothing line.
And
she showed up to the royal wedding.
Yeah, she showed up to the royal wedding and it was early as hell. You know, she flew in.
You're finally impressed.
She flew in just for the wedding. She was jet lagged.
I guess.
She is back at Wimbledon.
She is.
And she is winning.
She's winning. She won her first round match.
Yeah.
Against a woman named Arantxa Rus. My question. Is she named after Arantxa Sánchez Vicario, the tennis player from the early 90s? Because that's very Martina Hingis, Martina Navratilova. Anyway, I used to watch tennis in the
90s. Was that all of your tennis? Was Lewis just throwing out all of his tennis knowledge?
Did you read a Bazooka Joe comic this morning?
No, you have to understand. In the mid-90s, the USA Network would show, like, exhibition tennis, and they would, like, sex it up. And it would be like, Arantxa Sánchez Vicario versus Gabriela Sabatini in Dayton. Ooh, it's getting hot in here. I mean, it was, like, gross. And anyway, I watched it.
It's like an episode of Silk Stockings.
Totally Silk Stockings. The Femme Nikita, yeah.
But also, a report came out that Serena Williams is drug tested more than other athletes.
Okay.
Shocker.
I just want to know more about this. Because, like, there's people stalking her on her estate trying to get a drug test, right? I'm picturing the guy in the trench coat from the Billie Jean video just walking around her apartment.
Wild to me, given that the one who was actually doping was Maria Sharapova.
One of the things that was also interesting, and I think Serena tweeted this, where she at one point, so, you know, for Lewis, I guess, when you're
go on
with the rankings, you know, you're not always, if you haven't played in a while, your ranking falls. And so we would still assume Serena is the best tennis player, but if she hasn't played a match in a while, she's not going to be ranked number one. She'll be ranked like 376th or whatever. And they were still testing her when she was ranked really low. So you sort of understand the top players, obviously, those are the people you would want to be testing frequently, but then to sort of go out of your way to keep testing her when she's not ranked very highly feels a little transparent in what you're doing.
To show up 12 hours early for an appointment, like, I can get showing up, you know, like, a little early for something. You know, if you want to be on time, get this done quickly, but 12 hours early?
In the story, the person who came to test her showed up super early to do the testing, and I think there's a rule that they have to give you have to give them, like, a one-hour window or something like that. Like, whatever they did was kind of out of line, and she was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not here. You showed up crazy early, and people sort of ran with that she was doing something nefarious. Uh-huh.
And if they make an unannounced visit outside that one-hour window, you certainly don't get to give that athlete a missed test.
But you do.
Because three missed tests get you a doping rule violation. And I don't know. It's just, it makes so much sense that they try to test Serena more often, because there's just this insistence that Serena is so great. There has to be something else.
Well, this is the thing, too. Like, tennis before Serena, it was this, like, these long-limbed white women, you know, playing this sort of elegant game. And then Venus and Serena showed up, and they were like, oh, we're lifting weights, and we're serious athletes, and we're kicking all of your asses constantly. And they really, they changed. Like, no one had a body type playing tennis that Serena had before Serena Williams. And so people, it's like, they don't know what to do with that. And so, and it was a very, like, she came out looking like track stars. Like, she was cut and she was really built. And, like, you know, it was very different for the sport. And so it was the sort of like, well, she must be doing something differently. It's like, no, she's just a better athlete than all of you.
I want to reiterate also, if you watch, like, Wimbledon before Venus and Serena show up, I just want to concur with what Kara said. One year, it's Martina Navratilova when she's in, like, later in her career against Conchita Martinez. And the game is probably half as fast as you are familiar with it. So it's just, they are, like, their own sea change, totally.
But I definitely think that that plays in, like, you know, when you're looking at the way people have just made comments about her in general. And, like, if you're looking at this doping thing now, like, I think that she... it's really easy to look to the fact that just, like, this was this, like, black athlete coming in and, like, an athlete coming in and, you know, people.
Sharapova, even in her little memoir, I'm completely unstoppable unless I'm playing a game against Serena Williams or, you know, running into a child with a tennis racket, talked about how when she met Serena, she could tell that Serena was intimidated by, like, how young and, like, spry she was. It's like, Serena wasn't thinking about you.
Yeah, and there have been weird comments about her body. There's a writer who's sports writer whose name I'm not even going to say on air because he is such a waste of every resource on this planet. But I think you know who I'm talking about because he called her fat. People have talked about Serena's body since she showed up, and I do think that this all plays into it. But who cares, because she's better than all of you.
Also, the World Cup's happening, Lewis.
Trust me, I am aware of... I have lots of questions about soccer.
Do you?
Here's the first one. Who told soccer players about good haircuts? Because they truly are ahead of the gaze. I'm telling you, first of all, every third soccer player looks like Zayn Malik. How is that even possible? What planet are we on?
They are very hot.
How did they perfect shorts? We've had shorts for 100 years. And they got the great ones that look great on thighs. We never had that before.
It's because they've been, it's like so popular in Europe. They're like, we're well groomed.
Yeah, I guess it's a European sort of.
They got a nice cut
right
out there. Yeah.
And they also get their haircut every 2 days. I've never seen someone look even slightly disheveled out there.
Lewis, black people get their hair cut like every 2 days. Jay-Z is getting, people who get that lineup. Yeah, that lineup, okay. They're getting that cut often.
If there's a razor involved, you have to.
When you're black and you got money, you can get it every day.
You can get it, exactly.
Yes, you know, I slide into the, you know, every week or so.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm not Jay, okay? I'm not shooting music videos at the Louvre. So I'm not taking photos next to Beyonce trying to look lined up.
I actually studied abroad in Cape Town in 2010, so I was there right into the lead-up to the World Cup. It was the most soccer I had ever watched in my entire life because it was constantly on and I had to. And so I feel like I now have this, like, sort of general appreciation for what's happening. And I just like rooting for countries that I know Donald Trump will hate. That's really that's most of the benefit. Is like, I think everyone wanted Mexico to win just to be like, fuck you, buddy.
No, it should fill you with endorphins to scream the word Cameroon. I mean, you know what I mean? It's a nice feeling. Also, I will say this about soccer. This is like a hack take. But again, the acting with the injuries is just hilarious every time. Fully on the floor, tantruming, going for a Tony in the Miracle Worker, just convincing people you are injured when you are a big old scammer. Scamming is part of the sport.
This sounds like your sport.
I agree.
I mean, the more you talk about it for your confusion, it sounds like it's right up your alley.
Maybe my... thing I was most amused by was I was reading this story about, I didn't know that there were like psychic like octopuses.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
That people use to predict results. But there was a octopus from Japan that
I saw this.
Predicted all the results, even the loss, and then was sent to be sashimi.
They do that for other sports though, guys.
Oh, there's just like animorphs out there like deciding games.
I mean, not deciding, guessing, predicting. Hmm. I don't think that it's, they're not magic.
Coming.
That's what our sports roundup, that you'll get probably once every 4.5 months.
Love sports on Keep It.
Do we work for Bleacher Report yet? Did we get in?
I don't know. Some of y'all wanted to listen to this segment. When we're back, we're going to talk about a new Netflix stand-up special, Nanette.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com. And this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
We are back, and we are done talking about sports.
I was crying.
And Lewis has sweat through a shirt.
We are joined by the incomparable. Mm.
Someone's looked at the thesaurus recently.
Provocateur and writer, Samantha Irving.
Hi, guys.
I want like a whole studio audience to applaud right now because I'm so excited.
I want them hooting.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They're really clapping.
I want them hooting and hollering like you are Kelly on Married with Children. Like, yes. You walk on set and yes. Everyone has lost their minds.
But instead, everyone just treats me like Marcy. When I walk into a room, they're like, oh, you... And I'm like, I'm an integral part of the show.
I like clutch my face when I read your writing. You are so, so funny. And also, by the way, such brilliant use of capital letters always.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. People always complain about that. And I'm like, I'm shouting.
Right.
And you need to know that I'm shouting. So it's in all caps.
I feel guilty because I feel like I found you later than I should have.
Yeah.
And
where
I
were
feel,
you?
I feel I was wrapped up writing Jezebel blogs. I don't know what the fuck I was doing.
When you write for the internet, you don't have time to read.
I know. No, I didn't true. Read what I wrote.
You're busy checking. You're busy checking tweets, so you know what to be angry about in the morning,
exactly.
So you can write 600 words yeah. about nothing.
But then I
what
did.
What you guys do is incredible, like processing the news lightning fast, and then having an opinion and writing brilliantly about it. I take like 9 weeks between blogs, and they're only
but
about
they're so
myself.
Good. And then when I just then I discovered it, and I was like, oh. This is a perfect person.
Oh, my God. Kara. Okay. First of all, I have to tell you guys that I'm a huge fan, and I listen every week, and I'm also Lewis's number one fan.
Oh, how about that, guys? Twist. Yeah, take that.
You are also the only one.
Every week.
When thank you,
every week when you threaten to get rid of him, I'm like, please. Guys,
oh,
please.
Look at this.
Don't, please. Listen,
I'm so charmed.
Lewis and I are going to Mexico on vacation together this week.
You guys
and
are going there, on vacation together? Oh,
if there's an
please.
Accident, don't blame me, but I've been watching some Hitchcock.
Girl, how long are you staying here? Because we could scoot you right in.
We can kiki.
Yes, how can I figure out how to get on this and like take a video camera? You guys need to be like on a reality show together. I would watch it. 24 hours a day. Just the two of you bickering. Because I know it's like love. I know you
it is.
Well, what Ira does is bring up the news, and then I bring up Glenn Close, and it turns into a fight. Yeah. That's our process.
It's my favorite thing. Like, I'm always like, what old white lady is Lewis going to pull out of his pocket today? Right. And on every episode, it's a new one.
That's exactly right.
This week, we are talking about a Australian white lady, Hannah Gadsby.
Yes.
We all saw Nanette.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It you really was, don't know what you're so, in for when you start that special.
Yeah. I did not.
So for
don't.
Do you want to for
yes.
people who don't know, Nanette is a stand-up special on Netflix right now, although I think she's been doing the show previously. But it starts out as sort of just like you think it's going to be it's a comedy show and she's telling jokes, slight spoilers, but I don't know how you can spoil a stand-up routine. And then she, at one point she says that she wants to quit comedy. And it sort of takes this turn where she starts talking about all these other issues. She starts talking about self-deprecating humor and how it's actually sort of a form of humiliating yourself. And then she gets into some really heavy shit about being a woman, about being a lesbian, about coming to terms with her sexuality, about a lot of trauma that she's been through, and how the way that people do comedy, how it leaves out a big chunk of the story for the joke. And she gets into this idea of tension and jokes, and it's not what you think it's going to be.
In Nanette, it's not unusual in a stand-up special to shift from super funny material to super serious material, but this is the first special I've ever seen where she explains why she's shifting and telling you why she doesn't have to make a joke and why she'll surprise you with the joke. As you said, she gets really into the idea of tension and holding audience within tension and then releasing them. And then she talks about how that weighs on her. Like, is it, you know, responsible to be a comedian when you're talking about these serious issues? It is so dense, but not verbose either. It's just the economy of language is so incredible. And I've not seen anything like it. And most people would say the same thing.
And I love how it breaks with the form. I mean, like, Bertolt Brecht is shook.
That's right.
Never did anything
three
like
penny
that before.
Nothing, bitch. Yeah.
I know, right? Mother Courage, Mother Hubbard.
I don't know what they're talking about. Neither do I. I don't know what they're talking about.
These are the kind of things that I hear on the show, and I'm like, man, I am dumb.
No, we're not.
You write
we're
books.
Not dumb. That's not
yeah,
it.
But I write books about nothing, listen, and I watch Vanderpump Rules.
We have a very different skill set,
yes,
knowledge bank,
yes,
and I'm happy with the knowledge that I possess,
yeah,
even if it's not whatever the fuck the two of them were just talking about.
I'm always like, do I need to know these things to be a funny person in the world? Like, they make these references, and I'm like, man.
If you have to know about the Three Penny Opera to be funny, we're all in trouble.
Okay.
What did you think of the special, Sarah?
So I'm going to be a little bit of a jerk, which is kind of my thing, and say that for the first 10 or 15 minutes, I was like, what's the hype? Like,
I mean,
I
was on my phone too.
Yeah, I was like,
well, it's pretty typical.
I don't get
at
it.
First, yeah.
Yeah, because everyone everywhere is like, watch Nanette, watch Nanette, my phone, watch Nanette, on Facebook, watch Nanette.
Instagram,
and I was like,
stories.
Okay.
Ooh, this clip from Nanette.
Yeah, it was everywhere. And so I was watching it and I was like, first of all, I was like, I had to watch with the closed captioning because I was like, do I know what she's saying?
Oh, no, I had the glossary out for some of those terms. Yeah.
What else was Shrek with May Mike?
Nope.
I was hoping you would do an accent. This is like all of my dreams coming true at the same time. Okay, so I was like, this is boring. And Lindy and I were watching it and I was like, girl, are you like being moved right now? And she was like, no. So I was like, okay, let's stick it out. And then when she shifted, I was immediately like blown away and instantly crying because I talk a big game, but like I'm very sensitive. And there's a point when she said, I will never flourish, that I like something broke inside of me. And I also, the whole time, I was like, man, self-deprecation is 100% my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot watch this or else I will not have a job. I will not have anything to write. So I had to, like, give myself a pep talk and be like, that's her journey. Your journey is still talking about what a moron you are. You cannot, don't let her talk you out of a check. So I was,
you're not competing.
Yeah. I was like, okay, girl, you can be positive or not tear yourself down in front of people, but I am only 38 and I have no other skill set, so I'm going to keep doing this. But it was amazing. At the end, it was amazing. Then I immediately started worrying about, like, her having to perform this over and over.
Like, nightly.
In front of people. And I would have an emotional breakdown, I think.
Two things. One, it's like one of the first super memorable comedic responses to Trump, period, that I'm super like into and I think we'll remember forever. And two, it's her straight up picking a demo on the audience, the comedy demo, white straight guys, and being like, here's why you fucking suck, right in their faces. You know, for years people have tried to say that, you know, anger within the queer community, particularly lesbians, is like some sort of cliche. It's like, this has never been more qualified on film as far as I'm concerned, so we can shut the fuck up with that narrative.
Yeah.
I mean, anger is optimism.
And by the way, I just want to say also about stand-up. Growing up, stand-up was the only way I knew queer people fucking existed. When you had Margaret Cho talking about her parents operating a bookstore with a gay porn section, I was like, I've been to a Barnes & Noble. What is she talking about? And that set me on the journey that has led me here. But like Sandra Bernhardt and Elvira Kurt and, you know, Judy Gold.
I'll say I am not a fan of stand-up comedy from like anyone. I mean, I knew it was going to be something. I'd actually had a friend who had gone to the show. So I knew that there was like some sort of twist. And I would like you, because the beginning I was like, this is why I don't like stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
It was almost by the end, I was like, this needs to end, this needs to end. She can't say another. I'm so upset already. Like, and it was getting sort of deeper and deeper. And like, I was like, oh my God, something else cannot have happened to this woman. I can't handle this. I can't handle this.
The deconstruction to Picasso was chef's kiss.
That's my favorite part.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah. And then she spun it around too. It was like, maybe he was right, but you know.
Yeah. And again, I slept through the one art history class I took before I dropped out of college. So I was like, oh my God, it gets more boring. But
the only art I know is John Wayne Gacy's.
Right.
I did wonder.
Jim Carrey's.
The whole thing was, where are we going with this? And the jokes, okay, where are we going with this? Yeah. The art history, where are we going with this? But it was so satisfying.
Yes.
You know, and eventually.
You really have to stick it out, dumb people. I am one of you, so I will tell you, I was like, is this, because everyone was like, it's revolutionizing stand-up, and I was like, oh my God, is the next stand-up wave boring, smart, like, lecturing, that would be
TED
better.
TED Talks.
Yeah, I was like, should we be in a university auditorium right now? Like, it's like every funny teacher you've ever had who, like, goes on too long, but then it turns a corner, and I'm a terrible person.
I want to say, though, the part about Picasso, like, I feel like the interests of queer people in general are kind of minimized, and you're made to feel bad about liking your weird esoteric things. I mean, like, again, we were talking about all the 70s white ladies I'm into, whatever. It was nice to see somebody spend a moment on something they knew a lot about and definitely knew more than everybody else in that room about that thing and schooled them on that, too, in addition to all the other things she schooled them about. So that was, I thought, a particular gay-ass triumph.
Yeah, that was good.
Wait, hold on. He's not esoteric, though.
No, I'm saying knowledge-based.
Okay. Yeah.
It's Pablo Picasso. I mean, it's not you talking about Raquel Welch for an hour.
Excuse me, you've not seen the movie The Last of Sheila, so get off me.
I haven't seen the first of Sheila. What I really loved about it, too, was that it gave you sort of this, I talked about this, that James Baldwin article last week, the interview, you know, just about being gay in America, and how some of that was still sticking with me during Nanette, because it just talked about how our parents and like what society teaches us, like it instills so much homophobia in the world just innocuously. And, you know, every person still lives with that, no matter like how out you are, no matter how happy you are, like you still sort of have that hanging over you. And it was just nice to have that like verbalized.
Do we think she's going to be, one thing I do think is interesting is like, you know, we love to throw away anyone who's not like fucking Kevin Spacey. Like, I want this to lead to like more for her. And I sometimes worry that like four straight white dudes, like they're being told that they suck for 90 minutes or whatever. Like, I hope it's not this sort of like, okay, we listened to her once. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I hope like it continues to be something like what this person has to say is really interesting. And like you allow her to keep saying what she wants to say. Not like, okay, you gave us our one talking to. We watched your special and now be funny or whatever.
Particularly because in the special,
she quit for real.
I was going to say, she threatens to quit so many times.
She does.
You know?
She better not. Well, I really also just love how Netflix did her special, you know? It's like they've been really doing a good thing with, like, putting stand-ups on this new sort of, like, stage where it's like, you know, one special can almost make you, like, a household name. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like Ali Wong had her special and, you know, like, couldn't get enough of her. I feel like, you know, she was already being a writer, but now people, you know, not everyone knows the names.
No, she has a brand.
TV writers, that she's a brand. And I hope that Hannah, you know.
And I hope you got your money, girl.
Gets herself a brand.
I hope you got your money.
People are going to think her name is Nanette, though.
kind of like in the way that people still call Chelsea Handler Chelsea lately. It's like, guys, that's not a name, obviously. Lately? Yeah.
When we're back, Drake.
My name is Sarah, and I got involved with Vote Save America way back in 2018 when it first launched.
My name is Nancy, and I first got involved in VSA in 2018.
Ever since then, Vote Save America has been the best part of my political engagement. Anytime the election anxiety starts to feel overwhelming, I remind myself that my anxiety relief program donation is fueling grassroots organizations around the country.
And VSA has the Political Action Finder, a handy website I've used to find phone banks, knowing that I'm helping to win critical House seats.
In fact, I already signed up to volunteer with the Political Action Finder on the VSA website and helped replace disgraced former volleyball star George Santos.
So if you're someone who doesn't want to wake up on November 6th this year and regret not doing more, and I'm pretty sure you are, go to votesaveamerica.com to get started, and I'll see you at a phone bank soon.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com. And this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Drake's latest album, Scorpion, comes out amidst a beef with Pusha T, claims that he fathered a son in secret, which he has since confirmed on the album, and critiques that Scorpion is just more of the same from the Canadian rapper, and he refuses to grow up. So what do we think of Scorpion? I'm going to start with you, Sam, number one Drake fan, even more than me. I never thought I would meet somebody who loves Drake more than me.
Okay, so I am grappling lately with feeling old because I, like, look at people and I think, like, oh, like, my son. And, like, I think we might be close to the same age, but I've always had a, like, oh, look at my little Drake kind of feeling toward him. Look at my hot, beautiful son. the B-side, so, like, the super emo R&B side speaks to the mopey teenage girl in me who is actually still adult me. I have been listening to the song In My Feelings on repeat probably for the last 3 days. It's so good. I haven't listened to the first half much because I prefer crooning Drake.
Oh, see, I
to rapping Drake.
I have enjoyed Scorpion, although my one complaint would be I wanted a few more summer bops. Like, I wanted at least Nothing Else Was Going to Be Nice for What or God's Plan, because those are two perfect songs. Mm-hmm. But I would maybe want a third. I wanted, like, something that was at the level between God's Plan or Nice. Just give me one more bop, and I will listen to you cry about how upset you are you had a baby with this lady. I will do it if you give me one more bop, Drake. And he only kind of did it, but I have been... He was going through some shit on this album.
Yes. I love that. I love to hear a man processing his feelings.
He processed it up, down, and back.
To digest a Drake album, because when he drops them, they have 70 tracks.
Yes. Yeah, this one is a commitment.
This is a lineup.
I have been mostly first half. Because I like, you know, that kind of Drake. I like him.
You know what I like? I like when Drake is at the club but still sad.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, you know, but he's there. He's trying, but he's real sad to be there.
Yeah.
That's my favorite Drake.
Plus, there's just something about Drake's voice and his flow that just sort of, like, appeals to me. It soothes me. Yeah. So, like, I have every Drake album on just a mega playlist, and I can just, like, put it on shuffle, light a diptyque, drink wine. Bae's.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
And Chantal is very good, too, though.
Okay.
I mean, we could talk about this after.
We'll get into it. And then,
wait,
you know,
Summer Games is not in the first half of the album.
No,
right?
that's
my favorite one.
I love
that's
Summer
Games. That's my favorite
song
on it.
And I also love that he, you know, robbed Michael Jackson's crypt and found some unearthed vocals.
Did not hate that song. Thought it was really good.
It was really good.
Auto-tune to hell to sound like The Weeknd, but it's a very good song.
That's the thing, though. Drake is not, like, I when Hotline Bling came out, I remember, and I wrote about, because that video, that was like incredible. That was like, yes, a crazy moment. And he was such a like dork dancing the video in his sweater, and everyone loved it. And I was like, he knows what he's doing. He understands the internet and this culture and millennials more than any artist I think operating right now. Even when you don't love his albums, if you're not like a huge Drake fan, like you still kind of like it because he just like gets it.
Yeah.
And Scorpion's another example of like, even I haven't been like as into it as other albums, but I'm like, I still like this. Like, he still got me. He knows how to do this completely.
I mean, he is one of us, you know, he's 31. I am like 4 months older than Drake. And
Are you crying?
Yeah. I'm crying. I'm too old for him. I really do like the album more than Views too, which I thought
that's interesting to me. I'm surprised by that.
I thought Views was a damn mess. Mm.
Well, Sam, I have a question for you.
Yes.
As a Drake lover, this is your son. How do you feel about him being a father?
Conflicted. I don't want to be a grandmother, obviously. I feel so, he sounds so sad about it.
Yes.
And he sounds like he doesn't see the kid, and maybe that's not by choice. Is that what
I wasn't hiding my son from the world. I was hiding
the world from my son.
Yeah.
Is your son Magneto?
Didn't he say he'd only met? It sounded like he said he'd only even met this woman twice.
Yes.
Like presumably the time that they conceived Adonis, and then like there's that paparazzi photo of them at a restaurant where I assume she's breaking the news to him about this situation.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like he's seen the kid a lot, which I don't love.
Yes.
And I'm sure he's sending checks or whatever, but I mean, I would love to see Drake holding a baby. I feel like that would really make my heart complete. I also am a little conflicted because I dated a dude named Adonis who worked at KFC, and that makes me feel strange. It reminds me of my checkered past, so I don't love that. But I wish we could, like, see him with the baby, like, being a dad. I feel like it would be very cute.
What I think is, so part of the reason when Pusha T broke the news about Adonis, apparently, and I don't know if this was confirmed, but there were rumors that he was going to, like, introduce the kid with his new, like, Adidas rollout. So it was, he was going to kind of DJ Khaled his baby and, like, you know, just use it to profit. But it seems like he fully can't do that anymore after the Pusha T song.
I think that's a good thing. I feel like that was
it's for the best.
Super tacky way to announce your child to the world is,
yeah, I have a secret child also. Buy these track pants. Yeah.
Do you not feel though that this album is a little bit like, here's going to be a comparison you're not going to like, the Taylor Swift Reputation album, because it's a little bit about responding to like mystery critics in a way,
but
and
he
like,
always does that.
Yes, but I feel like it goes in and out of, I know exactly what he's responding to, and also he's just like, you know, monologuing so ad nauseum, it's hard to keep track of.
I do think that's one of the things I like about Drake is he does always respond to really petty shit.
Yes.
Which is a funny, even when it's just like nothing, where someone who's a multimillionaire would just be like, oh, I have so much money, I'm not going to respond to this. Drake is like, oh no, 40, turn the mic on. Like, this is what I'm going to respond
to. He is constantly so trying to stab Polonius behind a curtain. Like, that is Drake to a T. He's Hamlet. The Hamlet of rap, of hip hop, of R&B, of my life.
But thank God he did not respond to Pusha T.
Yeah.
Leave
Pusha T. Pusha T is a grandfather-aged drug dealer. He will kill you.
Yeah.
Like, Pusha T, like, probably watches Harlem Nights every day.
Me too, though. And I'm harmless.
How do we feel about, when people talk about like Drake and his misogynistic lyrics, they feel like a put on to me. They don't feel like mystical.
Right.
You know.
I think this is like a much larger conversation that would love to have with some ladies. But there's this thing when you like something and you have to recognize, but also recognizing that part of it doesn't like you. And I think that that's something like when I talk about like liking Sex and the City and there's no black people on it, I still like this. And you have to learn to enjoy things that maybe or can be hostile to you or, you know, at best just don't even involve you. And I think that for a lot of women, and in particular a lot of black women with hip hop, it is this thing where you're like, am I not going to dance to Nice for What? Mm-hmm. Like that, it's like feels like I'm being robbed of something by being like, well, I'm not going to listen to this. I also think Drake is the least of our worries in that department.
Yeah, I don't want to be a Drake apologist, but I feel like he like plaintively asks, do you love me? On so many songs that I'm like, that's the real him. Yeah. I'm like, he's got a posture, you know, so like the men respect him. But the real him is like writing in his diary being like, do you love me?
I mean, who am I to complain? I listen to Migos. So,
Also, speaking of, by the way, Cardi B got her second number one single, and I am so proud of her. You go have that baby, girl. Good for you.
I think she's the only woman still to have a number one single this year as a solo woman.
She's the first female rapper, too, to have two number one right. Billboard singles. I know trivia, too, Lewis.
Wow. Oh, my God.
That's all
Get
I know,
this queen
though.
On Jeopardy.
That's all I know.
Where do we think Drake's future lies?
With you, right, Sam?
Well, I would hope so, but you know how I feel about kids, so.
What do you mean where his future lies? Like he's going to be an architect or something?
I don't know. You know, like, he manages to keep putting out the same album, and I love it. Yes. I think he's probably just going to keep doing.
We're going to get more of these.
He's just going to keep doing the same thing.
But he's going to do, like, the Beyonce thing where he has, like, the baby on one of the tracks. I feel like that's next.
Yeah.
Like...
I also think Drake might find himself, because he does not seem to be interested in the woman who birthed his child.
No.
He's made that quite clear on March 14th. So I think he may get into his first, like, non-Rihanna, non-Serena, real-ish relationship. Because he's getting a little bit older now. He's, you know, he's clearly worn down by all that he's been through with the partying and the, you know, porn
Sam.
Stars.
I want him to get into therapy.
I think he might, and he's got the kid now. So I actually think the next Drake album might be even like an ode, some more odes to like a specific, like the lady we know we're talking about. I don't know. I could see that.
Anyway, Drake is unstoppable. He is like all 25 of the fucking songs are at the top of the
charts. It's so annoying.
He's gotten like what, like his streaming numbers were just like ignorant numbers.
Yes. Shattered one day streaming records. In the first 24 hours, it had 170 million streams on Apple Music around the world. And on Spotify, it was being listened to 10 million times an hour.
Jesus. I cannot wait until we are all like 55, like millennials, and Drake is doing his touring still, and we get to like do like when my parents would go to like a James Brown concert, and just like, because I forget that he was a young person, like when my dad was listening to him, like this was like a young hip person. I can't wait for us to all like go to Drake shows, and just like our kids are going to be so embarrassed. Well, not, you know, the youths will be embarrassed.
It's going to be like going to a Frankie Beverly
show.
Drake.
We're going to wear all white.
Yes. Oh, we Drake, have to wear all white.
Yes.
Drake in the nostalgia tent at summer festivals. Like, yeah. when we saw Val Rogers and she.
Yeah. Drake at Essence Fest in 25 years.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait.
We'll be there. You know what? He will probably agree to come on the show at that point. Drake, if you're listening.
Adonis will be 26, just so embarrassed by his dad.
Samantha, I want to thank you so much for
this
coming here.
This is a real dream.
You have been our best guest.
You really?
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
we have a big wall.
Hopefully
where
none of our other guests have heard that. But
I will come sit outside
drama,
your door.
Whatever.
Yeah, if
they want to top you, they can come back. Shit.
Yeah. And then they can top me in real life because I'm a sub.
This is the actual real contender for replacing Lewis, by the way. This is the only one you should be seriously shook
Pay
by.
Attention.
I would cry, but also take the job.
Check out Samantha Irby's Meaty or We Are Never Meeting in Real Life. They are in bookstores near you. And we're back with our favorite segment of the week. It is Keep It. Kara, what are you keeping this week?
I am keeping these scooter things, these motorized scooters that have taken over my neighborhood. I think they began where so much evil begins in Silicon Valley. And then they've brought them to Venice and they've slowly creeped over a little further east. So there are these electronic scooters that you can rent, just sort of like you just walk up to it and you were able to get on it or some shit like that. And then you can just leave them literally anywhere you want. You just drop them on the street like trash and that's it. It seems super dangerous. No one is ever wearing a helmet. They're riding them on the sidewalk. They're getting in my way. They're leaving them on places where I can trip, and I hate them so much. And this argument about like, oh, they're for people who maybe live like a little far from a bus stop and they can help with, that's not what they're doing. That's not who's using these things. It's like asshole teenagers who were using these fucking scooters, and they are not helping anyone with public transportation, and they're not reducing driving or solving anything with congestion or any of that shit. They are just a nuisance, and I hope they die.
No matter who you are, if you're on a scooter, male or female, your name is Skylar to me. If you soar past me, I'm like, Skylar almost just ran me the fuck over. And I can see he went to a state school and he's cocky about it. I don't want to know about his liberal arts degree. By the way, I also went to a state school and have a liberal arts degree. Moving on.
Is this a Tinder ad? I hate the birds too.
They're awful.
But I also hate like the real birds. Like shoot them out of trees, right?
No. when the birds don't win in the Hitchcock movie, it's a hero's tale.
If I see a peacock,
I'm gonna start just stealing the scooters and putting them in my parking garage. That's what I'm gonna start doing. And you guys aren't gonna, because clearly none of you are responsible enough. You're leaving them on like the lawn in front of my apartment. You can't be trusted. They're all gonna be in the garbage dump. That's where you can find your birds.
Lewis, what are you keeping?
There's this Netflix rom-com that came out a few weeks ago called Set It Up, which stars two people who were in the movie Everybody Wants Some, which is a really good movie, including Zoe Deutsch, who, this is a person who is an Ellen Page, who is Anna Kendricking her way into being a Rose Byrne, which I think is going to work out for her. She's really great. But in this movie, there's like a gay best friend type, a gay roommate, and he's played by Pete Davidson, who has just decided simply not to act in the movie. He's just Pete Davidson. I want to shout out my friend Joe Reed, who wrote a piece about this at Decider. It's not novel to watch Pete Davidson be like, what if I were a gay guy? Isn't that something novel? No. I already saw, like, that's not a new or fresh take. We're still wondering what it looks like when gay people are in movies, period. So I'm not, like, thrilled by you pretending you're a gay man. I also fucking saw Willem Dafoe play, like, a harsh asshole gay guy in that Boondock Saints movie that every college freshman in 2005 needed to make sure I saw. In this movie, he gets three scenes, and what's painful to me especially is that there is another gay actor in the movie who gets one scene as like a waiter, and he is hilarious. His name's Jeff Hiller. That guy should have been playing this character. But anyway, Pete Davidson being like, shrug, I'm a gay guy this time, ain't cute.
Mine is an email that I just received from...
Are you prepared for this then?
Well, listen. This email was too hot!
Okay.
A Hollywood Reporter exclusive that there is a secret Roe v. Wade film shooting now in New Orleans.
Oh, hell no.
And it is being co-directed by Nick Loeb, the man who battled Sofia Vergara for her Frozen embryo. And it is starring John Voight and Stacey Dash.
Oh, no! 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 This is not real. You're just saying Mad Libs. This isn't real.
First of all, John Voight and Stacey Dash are not allowed to meet. I can't believe that even happened. I hate John Voight.
Wait, Nick, the man... Ah! Ah! He was awful. He was, like, trying to make her... Ah! About that, Roe v. Wade?
Yes.
That you would sneak Stacey Dash into the last minute of this podcast like this. I usually have to prepare days for that.
Jesus Christ.
It's been shooting in secrecy, and there is an exclusive in the Hollywood Reporter.
It must be, like, against Roe v. Wade if Stacey Dash is in it.
Yeah.
Oh, hell.
Well, she's a brilliant Oscar-winning actress. Of course they'd pick her for that movie.
Oh, my God. Can't we... Have I not suffered enough with this bitch? It's like your next thing, Omarosa, is going to make a cameo, and it's just going to be, you'll never see me again.
Well, wait until you hear about next week's guest.
Ann Coulter is the judge.
She's Omarosa, and she's back.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that's been our show this week. I want to give another shout out to Sam Irby, who is great. I'll see you all when I get back from Mexico. And R.I.P. Lewis.
Bye, guys.